You're about to hear Thought Leader Life with Mitchell Levy on the FIR Podcast Network.
Hi, this is Mitchell Levy, and welcome to episode 101 of Thought Leader Life. By the way, it's just so cool to be in the three-digit numbers. So, you know, Cammy, you and I did that earlier, and it's just it's fun to say those numbers. Anyhow, I'm excited about the month. I'm particularly excited about this guest. And first, let me introduce you to Cammy Hoiza. I think I got it. I got close.
Got it.
President of or CEO of Zoetica. And you've got as your tagline, I like it, it's community connector. Cammy, thanks so much for connecting us with all the guests and things we're going to talk about this month.
I'm excited. I'm really excited about this conversation today.
So we have with us the president of the Cause Marketing Forum, David Hesaziel.
No,
how do I do, David?
It's Hesaziel, but you can call me David.
Oh, that's right, Keel. I wrote it down wrong. We'll just call
I have
David.
A lot of zeal, Mitchell, so we're going to get along just fine.
Hesaziel. I got it now. You know, hey, David, welcome to the show. Thanks for agreeing to join us.
Happy to be here.
So, you know, we like to start with just a softball question. Given that you are the president of the Cause Marketing Forum, you are the perfect person to answer the question, what really is cause marketing? How would you define it?
It's a pretty broad subject. It's basically a wide variety of commercial activity that aligns a company or brand with a cause with the goal of generating both business outcomes and social outcomes. And each part of that definition is important. Marketing, nonprofit marketing, which Cammy knows so much about, is not cause marketing. It's nonprofit marketing. And a PSA that has no attempt at having any business impact isn't cause marketing. It's that integration of trying to do well by doing good that's at the core of what we talk about.
Cammy, I think when I asked you earlier for your definition, it sounded a whole lot like what David just said. That was pretty cool.
Well, I just sit at the feet of that master, right? So, yeah, doing good by doing well, though. I really like that tagline. That works for me.
Maybe we have to do that as a tagline. So, David, tell me, what is hot in the space right now? What's kind of working? What are people doing? What are companies focused on?
Well, here we are in a Google Hangout, so it won't surprise you that the boundaries continue to be moved forward in terms of integrating online, of figuring out how to use social media, how to share with video, how to reach people where they live. And so great campaigns live in many different spaces, including the electronic frontier. And some of the programs that we see that we're really impressed by are using those capabilities. Cause Marketing Forum, just a little bit of background, is a 15-year-old company that produces an annual conference on this topic. We bring together people from the business sector, the nonprofit sector, and then agencies and consultants and media companies that are often sitting in the middle. And one of the highlights of our annual conference are the Cause Marketing Halo Awards, where we look in a variety of different areas and ask people to submit programs that they were particularly proud of in the previous year. And then we share them there, and we also share them. We've got 13 years worth at causemarketingforum.com. Anybody can go see them for free. And one of the campaigns this year that I thought was so cool was from Dick's Sporting Goods. Dick's Sporting Goods, clearly involved with the sports community, with getting people to go out and do stuff. They had experimented with a number of different cause affiliations over the years, and they hit upon something brilliant in the 2 years prior to this. They decided that they knew that there were so many school districts that were having budget problems, and what's the first thing that goes when you've got budget problems? School sports. And also drama, probably. They decided that they would help schools that were on the verge of losing a football team or no longer being able to offer track or other problems like that, help them raise money and match it. But what they did that was particularly brilliant, they used mass media to get the word out. But they then provided these local groups who applied to be a part of the program with the tools and the training to know how to do crowdfunding. And so they would give people the opportunity to say, we're going to reach out to all of our friends and relations, get it out there, get them to give, and then the Dick's Sporting Goods Foundation matched their program. And they have so much of the power of cause is about the stories. And this, you can imagine all the wonderful stories across America of kids who are getting to do the sports that they love, have that healthy activity, the goodwill that's built between those local stores that help make this happen and those communities. So that's in a nutshell, it sums up a lot of the great things we're seeing, storytelling and use of technology.
Well, I particularly like, and I see this a lot in the thought leadership space, when you want to get your employees or your partners or your advocates to be able to tell your story, what you need to do is train them. But you need to train them in such a way that it's just sort of easy to do, and you know you can't make assumptions and sort of quick learning, one, two, 3 minute videos that drive something. And it sounds like Dick's Sporting Goods has been successful at that. I want to take their training program on crowdfunding.
Yeah, me too.
Well, and also, I mean, that's great to hear because they were multiplying their effort, which, you know, brings along that triple bottom line. We were talking about that in the earlier show today, but that idea of that triple bottom line, which is where the community is part of the whole thing. And so bringing that community to bear. How did they tell their stories? I mean, were they telling the stories for the people or were they just amplifying stories that the people were telling?
Well, there were a variety of ways. Part of the, you know, the program was getting people involved and touching a lot of people with just showing them what they were doing. So they found true stories out in communities. And then they turned them into spots and into some documentary type film that went on broadcast as well as on online video.
That's great. That's such a great idea.
Yeah, very, very powerful.
I like it. I like it a lot. You know, we had I want to hear a couple other stories, but we had a conversation, when we were talking about our preliminary show, and we were talking about corporate social responsibility, CSR campaigns. And we're talking about the sort of the differences between CSR and cause marketing. And it'd be great if you sort of touched on that a little bit.
Sure. Well, CSR, to my mind, is the underpinnings of the activity that we see manifested in cause marketing. So corporate social responsibility is an attitude. It's a belief system that says corporations are responsible for doing more than just simply towing up to the edge of the law. They're supposed to be good citizens within the context of being a part of a society. And that involves environmental policies and labor policies and governance policies and policies related to how they deal with the communities that they serve and who are their customers. Cause marketing, or actually I to give a little plug, a few years ago I collaborated with the famous Professor Philip Kotler and his longtime associate and social marketing expert Nancy Lee on a book called Good Works. And within that, we use a rubric that talks about corporate social initiatives, all sorts of activity that involves a company trying to demonstrate and activate the things that are part of its corporate social responsibility policies. We talk about those that are more marketing oriented, that are geared towards moving forward some business objectives, like cause-related marketing, where you say, we're going to offer up a corporate donation in exchange for you buying our product or using a coupon or voting in a online poll or taking some other activity. Cause promotion, where they're saying, we're behind this particular cause. Why don't you get involved as well by volunteering or giving at the checkout or many other ways? Corporate social marketing, where they're saying, we believe that we've got to change certain behaviors. It could be not the very popular lately is don't text and drive. And you'll see a lot of companies, automotive companies, et cetera, telecom companies talking about that. And then there's corporate philanthropy, the more fundamental or traditional format. There's getting employees engaged is another important and growing area. And then socially responsible business practices. So corporate social responsibility is sort of the concepts and the ethos, because marketing or corporate social initiatives bring it to life in the workplace and in the marketplace.
So I wanted to point out something to the thought leaders who are watching, aspiring thought leaders, existing thought leaders. Okay, David is doing – he did two things that are exciting me. First, we have a timeline, right? So we can't go past our timeline. We couldn't get the bottom third, those that are listening, we couldn't get the bottom third to work. So what does David do? He reaches into his drawer, he grabs a name badge, and he puts the name badge on his shirt. Okay, very cool. So it's sort of the pseudo bottom third. Second thing, I can't tell you how many, we as a publisher, we published over 300 physical books, over 500 ebooks. I can't tell you how excited I am anytime an author gets a chance to hold up their book. Here's mine on creating thought leaders, right? So anytime an author gets a chance to hold up their book, I can't tell you how many times people don't do that. And I just applaud you for your being able to demonstrate as a thought leader that you're doing the right stuff.
Well, thank you. We're trying it. I'm proud of that project.
Super cool. So, Cammie, you and I were talking before. We were thinking about, okay, what's right the next level? What's the right area to start talking about? And I think the question comes back to the one that resonates in my mind is, okay, you're a company. You want to do cause marketing. You're thinking it's going to drive success for you. Can you talk a little bit about, okay, what cause do I start with if I'm a company? What are my expected outcomes? A couple of those things. And Cammie, you could drive a little more of that detail.
Sure. Well, I think that to use some shorthand, it's often been said that the cause that you choose should be able to pass the 3-second rule. What's the 3-second rule? After hearing that you're involved with a particular cause, there should be a fairly obvious logic, and somebody very quickly could say, oh, yeah, I see why they'd be involved with that. So, you know, the classic example of that would be a supermarket or a restaurant fighting hunger. Okay, there's a clear association there. Where it becomes less clear, and we're hopefully getting away from this, but in the olden days, it was very common for whatever the CEO was into, that was the cause. And so you'd have plumbing supply companies, you know, supporting the opera, you know, not a clear, you know, I guess they can make your pipes sing or something like that. But I
was just thinking about the opera stinks. I couldn't quite even come up with a half full. Okay, so, you did good. Thank you.
So in selecting a cause, now the origin stories, I was just talking with somebody today about this, can come from a lot of different places. It could be about who you serve. Do we serve men, or do we serve women, or do we serve kids or people geographically? You know, our hometown is this place, and this is what we care about. I was talking this morning, and we were talking about the story of Jockey, the undergarment company. Their adopted cause is adoption. You go, well, why is that? The CEO of Jockey is very public. There's nothing to be ashamed of. She talks a lot. She was adopted into that family and now has inherited this entire company and runs this company, and identified that for kids who were leaving foster care and getting into the adoption system, there was very little support for helping those adoptions succeed, and that became their cause. So it can come from something very personal and meaningful that can generate empathy among the shoppers or the clients or the retailers that you deal with. It can be geographic. It comes from a lot of places, but there should be some internal logic to it and not just seem frivolous and promotional.
So David, does the – I'm sorry, Cammie. I just wanted to follow through on that one thing, and then I'll be quiet. Does the 3-second rule apply to Jockey then? I mean, it's not an – if you didn't know the CEO, you wouldn't put the two together.
Yeah, so I think that is where it becomes more challenging, and where one of my second Hesychian rules of what the heck you have to do in cause marketing come into place. So when you decide this is important enough to us. And you could say, well, you know, most of the shoppers of their products are women, and women may feel a soft spot towards kids. I mean, there's a lot of generalizations obviously going on here. So if you can get them interested and tell them the story, they can make the connection. But as with any other kind of marketing or other endeavor, if you don't put the planning and the resources into communicating what you're doing and doing it in a top-notch way, you're going to fall flat. Sometimes the power of the story can get you a lot further than you would have if you didn't have it. But if people don't know about it, if your idea of cause marketing is, well, we support, and we can get a, you know, we support breast cancer, we're a women's oriented, the fight against breast cancer, we support that. And our campaign is we do a grip and grab, which is what we used to call it in the newspaper business, where somebody handed over a check and it showed up in the local paper like this. That's not a marketing campaign, and that is not going to get you any kind of real progress other than making your internal circle feel good. So you really have to work it, and if you don't pass the 3-second rule, then you got to work it even harder. It's not impossible to do. It's just more challenging.
I really like what you said there, David, about the origin story. To me, that's really what it is. You know, if you're not going to be clear about where your connection is, or it's not clear, your 3-second rule doesn't happen, then you have to develop the origin story, which is part of the cause, which is part of the marketing. I mean, you know, a story can be a very powerful piece of marketing. I mean, Dove, I mean, you can look at what Dove has done with some of their campaigns. I mean, it is a 3-second rule thing. You know why they're dealing with women and that kind of thing, and young girls and those kinds of marketing pieces. But what I really love about that is that that story becomes the I like that origin story. That really works for me, I think. And also, it kind of gets you away from some of these other things, which I call the cause du jour, right? Which is, you know, greenwashing, pinkwashing, I don't know, whatever washing you want to call it. But could you talk a little bit about what greenwashing, pinkwashing, what that is, and why that becomes a really big problem sometimes in the community? Because that is a huge conversation that happens probably internally, but I think it's important for businesses and people to know that when they're thinking about adopting a cause.
Right. Well, I think that to look at the pinkwashing example, one thing that we can tend to forget right now, because it's been going on for so very, very long, is that way back, I don't know, 25 or more years ago, breast cancer was the disease that nobody talked about. Mm-hmm. So as much as people are taking pot shots at, you know, oh, they're pinkwashing, or they're just getting on the bandwagon, or I'm sick of it, that the efforts that were made to make people comfortable with and feel that this was an important issue and that they should be talked about, really, it was some heroic efforts and it really worked. Where it became ineffective from a business point of view for a lot of companies, in my opinion, and is that just because there is a cause, just slapping a pink ribbon on your product and giving a donation is when there's if you're the only one doing it, then it can get you a lot of attention and maybe move the needle. But if everybody is doing it and you're not really doing anything special and you're not creating stories and you're not tapping into emotion and you're not showing that you're not just doing it because it was a better deal than doing a movie promotion, but that you actually, your company cares about it, your people are, you know, you're providing access to healthcare, whatever it is. If you just do it as the lowest common denominator, then it's not good for the business, and it somewhat cheapens the cause. We're talking today about cause marketing. I think cause marketing, like all sorts of marketing, sorts of follows a bell curve. There's a little bit of really awful stuff, but I swear I've been doing this for 15 years. I've seen very few horrible examples. I can share one or two. There's a lot of stuff that's it's okay or it's acceptable. And then there's a few that we pull out, like a Dick's Sporting Goods or others, that really break out. That's true with sports marketing. It's true with all sorts of in-store displays, etc. And so I just, you know, I sometimes feel that cause marketing gets pounded on because we're all so earnest. We want it to work so much. I'd rather see it continue. I'd love to see all sorts of campaigns go to be fantastic, but I also don't want to completely eliminate everything that is sort of doing the job. So there are some campaigns that are okay, but not going to win awards, and that's fine. But you're right. But in terms of being effective and in terms of advising somebody, it's very important not to just get on the bandwagon and do something that's not going to stand out. And it doesn't mean it has to be a huge budget. Creativity can play a huge role. Being strategic and figuring out what channels and what tools you have make a big difference.
Definitely. And one of the things I was going to ask you, because I know that there's some research behind if cause marketing is really good for the bottom line or not. Could you talk a little bit about that? Like, why would people choose to do it?
So there's multi-levels of research and case studies to show that, again, well-conceived, well-executed programs can be very effective. So the base case that got everybody interested in this is ongoing attitudinal research that Cone Communications has been doing for 25 years or more, showing that in a toss-up, price and quality being equal, if I'm standing at the shelf and I could pick this one or that one, and this one is associated with a good cause, I'm very, very likely to pick that one. Of course, that kind of talk is cheap, because who would not want to say that? It's amazing, actually, that when they started the research, that was maybe in the 60 to 70% range. It's now in the high 80s to 90% range. It's kind of where our heads are at. But people often shop thinking of a variety of different things, from their pocketbook to what's convenient to what they're used to. And so it really requires going above and beyond to figure out how to make it work. And we can share examples. I love examples that really show change in attitude, real important attitudes or behavior. So some years ago, Whirlpool, like many other appliance manufacturers, a very engineering-driven culture, basically they would always talk in their marketing about how effective their machines were at getting your clothes cleaner, keeping your dishes clean, etc. They did some research and they found that they have a real problem, because in the appliance industry, you only buy one of those things every 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years. And they've only, it's hard to know when people are going to be shopping for them, as opposed to yogurt, which you might buy every day. They found that if you made a...
For 20 years, but I probably shouldn't say that.
And so they decided that they found out that if you can make an emotional connection with the buyer, that the brand meant something to them emotionally, that could help. On the side, as a purely philanthropic and sort of employee engagement gesture, the company had been doing a deal where they gave Habitat for Humanity a range and a refrigerator for every house they built in the States. They took that program, they built it into something that they shared to say, won't you join us in supporting this effort, because a home of one's own makes such a difference. They had all sorts of advertising. They got tremendous response, and they actually did, and they shared market research, which they went to a town. There are certain towns where one side of the town gets one cable feed and the other side gets the other, and then they compare the responses and the attitudes of those people. And they found that all of the things that they wanted to change in terms of indicators of preference or brand loyalty skyrocketed among those people who had the association that Whirlpool cared and gave to Habitat for Humanity in this way, much more so than the people who saw sort of the traditional commercials. So there are campaigns like that where we can say, yeah, it really can and does work.
That's great. Thank you for sharing that, because actually in my early career, I worked a little bit with Habitat for Humanity. So I kind of know about that, although I didn't know about the research side of it. So that's really exciting and interesting to me. Really interesting.
Well, I thought I'd also point out the way you presented it, Whirlpool didn't do anything different. They already had those techniques in place. So they were already doing this activity. All they did is actually now tell the world in a way that was – is that
exactly. And it's one of those – if a tree falls in the forest and nobody hears it, kind of a situation. Did it make a sound? And there is a fine line. You don't want to come off as bragging about how good you are. You want to show that this is important to you and that you share this value and you want to engage other people in it. But they did lift the veil and they did make people aware of it, and it paid real dividends.
That's great.
I guess maybe the high tech companies that do donut days or give alcohol on Fridays, that's probably not something they want to share with the world. So that may not work. I like the washing machines. That's so cool.
Ask me another one.
He's ready for the next one.
David, you had mentioned that there were one or two examples of things that just really fell by the wayside.
Yeah, well, and again, we happen to be, well, in this case, this is another breast cancer. Sort of, this campaign sort of did me a favor because everybody loves to ask this question. Tell us about something awful. And I didn't really have a good example. And the example that really stands out is when Kentucky Fried Chicken, and I like Kentucky Fried Chicken. You shouldn't eat it every day, but I go once a month or so and sneak off and have I get the grilled, but it's still an indulgence. Kentucky Fried Chicken adopted a major campaign with the Susan G. Komen for the Cure organization, linking a contribution that was made when pink buckets of chicken were bought. And it actually, for the charity, was an extremely lucrative deal. They raised about $4 million. And there was a logic to it that said that Kentucky Fried Chicken is particularly popular in among African Americans and other minority groups who don't get as much messaging about breast cancer as others. So they felt we should do this deal. But of course, doing a health-oriented campaign with Kentucky Fried Chicken, it just smells. And they got pilloried in the press. I don't know if that many consumers who were actually in the stores who were eating their Kentucky Fried Chicken thought it was awful, but the PR black eye was so awful that it was truly a very ill-conceived, and you wouldn't be surprised to hear, only one-year campaign.
So,
and it led to this, again, that kind of thing also opens you up to accusations as a charity that you're not being true to your mission and that you would do almost anything for a buck, which is not true of today's Komen organization, but they made a mistake and they took their lumps.
So they actually got the Komen organization also got a black eye out of that.
Oh, sure.
Nobody. And by the way, we're going to start a drinking game because we mentioned this one in the opening thing. So every time somebody mentions the KFC pink bucket.
Oh, get out of here.
Get a drink.
All right.
Well, it could be a drink of tea or something else.
Well, but
we mentioned it because the sponsor for this particular month is a company called Veda Foods. So it's Veda Foods, VEDAFoods.com. And it, Veda Foods has prepackaged food products for diabetics and pre-diabetics, right? So as I'm thinking, Kentucky Fried Chicken certainly caused marketing in any food company that's not healthy, nutritious food like Veda Foods has, it wouldn't be something that would make sense.
Right.
So
a coda to that is that subsequently, Yum Brands, which owns Kentucky Fried Chicken and a number of other brands in that fast food, fat quick serve arena, they embraced hunger in a big way, and it's totally appropriate and right, and they're raising a lot of money all around the world. And people can criticize that they think that fast food companies, you know, they're not fans of them, but if they're going to be doing something, that's a really appropriate way to do it, and I think it's working and doing a lot of good.
That sounds like that passes the 3-second rule, for sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, so let me give the audience – If I'm a firm and I'm thinking about cause marketing, the first thing everyone has to do is go to your website and look at the awards, the Halo Awards, great name for awards, for the last, you know, 14 years?
13 years and counting.
So, because that will give you a bunch of examples of things that have worked. If you're, if you string together what you're thinking, you gave an example before of Dick's Sporting Goods, but if you think about either technology-wise or motivational-wise, what would be some of the top things you should be thinking about? What should the marketer who's who wants to, the CEO says, hey, we got a cause, we got to do cause marketing, what would they do?
Right. Well, so I never want to be in the position of sounding like the guy, you know, what's that old expression, to the man with a hammer, every problem looks like a nail. Marketing can be a fabulous approach to solving a lot of business problems. They can be internally oriented. They can be dealing with business to business. They can be dealing with consumers. But the first step, actually, before deciding that you're going to do cause marketing, is figuring out what your business needs. And then figuring out what's a really smart approach to doing it. Because one of the things that drives me a bit nuts, every December, this coming December, beginning of December, we'll open up our nomination process for folks to enter the Halo Awards. And in late January, I get them. And I have these thick glasses now because part of my job is to read every single application and narrow them down to four per category and then pass them on to an independent group of judges to make the final decision. And I can't tell you how many entries come through the door with no business rationale whatsoever. Just sort of seemed like the right thing to do, which I applaud from a humanitarian point of view. But since I'm a kind of a practical guy and what we are talking about is trying to say, you can do this sustainably. You can have a healthier company by taking on these techniques and these approaches and making good things happen internally as well as for the rest of the world. It just drives me crazy. So first step is, yes, you're every company now of any size and even local companies want to have a part of their profile be that they're seen as good citizens. And so you should be able to find some cause or a thing that you want to work on in that vein. But in terms of actually creating a robust program, you start off with what are we trying to accomplish? Are we trying to change attitudes? Are we trying to build loyalty? Are we trying to get new distribution? Are we trying to attract and retain employees into jobs that that may not be that interesting? But we add this new element. This is a huge part of what goes on in retail, is trying to make jobs a bit more interesting that, you know, are not all that high paying and that are often have a lot of churn. There's a lot of different motivations for what you want to do. But start with an objective and then build from there. And then there are a wealth of case examples to follow and borrow from, as well as articles on best practices and how to approach them on our website or by attending a webinar, or coming to a conference, or giving us a call.
I love it. Actually, that was very well done. We're getting close to the end. It's always amazing how quickly 30 minutes goes. And so that was the right cue up for. Or is there any question that we should have asked that we didn't? And certainly, how do people get a hold of you?
Well, sure. Well, the latter part first. CauseMarketingForum.com. If you happen to be listening to us in Canada, we actually recently, a year ago, started companiesandcausescanada.com. We've had two conferences up in Toronto and absolutely loved it up there. But we do have people from all around the world looking at our resources at causemarketingforum.com. And I guess that that one of the more common questions that people ask is this over? And I've been looking at this for over a decade now, and I think that it's not at all over, but it is amazing how it changes. And any vibrant area changes at times. I mean, you know, direct mail is not the future of individual giving, but online is growing dramatically. Similarly, print-based, very simple, because it 30 years ago, just making an acquaintance, making an association between your brand and a cause, that was enough to make make an impact. Now it's all moving into integrated programs that may have a variety of different elements, online, offline, experiential, and also that show impact. It used to be that cause marketing was all about company A teaming up with nonprofit B, and the hero of the whole campaign was saying, we're contributing to this good group. It didn't really talk much about what they were going to do. Mm-hmm. Now people have the access to any information they want by just going online. They want to know, what's it actually doing? What are you going to do with this money? What are you trying to do? And impact is really important. So those are a couple of things that that are on my radar screen, and that I'm really excited to see in next year's Halo winners, as well as all of the campaigns that we learn about in the years to come.
Well, you've turned me into a convert. I'll definitely pay attention to the Halo winners, and I'm going to go back and look at the awards more closely. I'm very excited about it. But what you mentioned, anyone on this show will get right away. You need ROI. You need multiple modalities, right? It's the you need to change with the times, and you need to start with the end goal in mind. I mean, this is you know, block and tackle business that is not always applied everywhere. It's pretty amazing. Cammie, what do you think? How would you wrap up this conversation? What stood out for you?
What really stood out for me was the idea of, I mean, I still am loving that idea of, you know, telling a story, telling an origin story, and really involving others with that story, and baking it into what you do, versus just, you know, making up a campaign. I love it when companies bake into what they do. And I'm trying to remember, it was the jeans company. You're going to help me because they won a Halo award.
Well, there's Lee Denim Days.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the ones that they started washing their jeans with less water.
Oh, Levi's.
It was Levi. Yeah, so they baked that into their actual product, which I thought was awesome. I mean, that was just an awesome example of how to do that right as a company. And really, like, having that kind of impact, I think, is really important. And what you said about having an objective up front, I think that's just marketing 101. It's something that we teach in marketing, you know, just generally, like, you know, have an objective, have a measurable objective, you know. Let's look at what our goals are. And is this one of the, and I don't want to call it tactics, but is it one of the tactics we're going to use to get people involved with our product? So, you know, I really do love that you kind of keep that front and center. And I like that you're a pragmatist about this instead of a dreamer, unicorns, and all of that. Because I think in the end of the day, if it doesn't make an impact, companies will stop doing it, ultimately. They won't see it as important. And when times get tough, they cut it. But if they see it as something that is critical to their bottom line and to their product and to their mission, that becomes maybe even the thing that leads them through a downturn. So I do find that, you know, I can really resonate with that kind of thinking.
Nice. And Cammie, how do people reach out to you?
Oh, you can get a hold of me at CammieChat, CammieChat on Twitter. You can come to my website at Zoetica, Zoetica. Media, media.com. And you can pretty much reach me anywhere on the internet at CammieChat. Just search CammieChat, you'll find me.
Perfect. And for me, it's just Google Mitchell Levy. I've got a ton of sites. Either go to ThinkAha, or for this show, what I really like as a reminder for those listening or watching, you could, if you're listening, you can watch it on YouTube or SlideShare. You can listen to it on iTunes or in the Shell Holtz FIR podcast network. You could also, we'll end up with a couple blog posts. And David, I'm looking forward to seeing your reaction, because out of this session, we're going to pull 40 to 50 aha messages, or maybe there'll be hassle killisms.
That was awesome.
And it'll be nice to see, and feel free to upgrade those. And what we'll do over the month is we'll end up creating a aha book with 140 aha messages. And I'm really looking forward to seeing how my people pull together your messages. So it's going to be kind of fun to, because as I'm hearing you talk, I'm thinking, oh yeah, that's one, that's one. So I was trying to keep an eye on that, but you definitely have them. And you mentioned two or three on the show. We'll see if we can get you 40 or more. So
very good. A pleasure to work with you today. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Hey, thanks for joining us, everyone. Thanks for joining us at Thought Leader Life. I'm looking forward to another couple sessions with Cammie, and you're absolutely fantastic. Take care, everybody. Have a good day.
You've been listening to FIR Presents Thought Leader Life with Mitchell Levy, brought to you in association with Lawrence Reagan Communications, serving communicators worldwide for more than 35 years. More information at www.reagan.com. In each episode, Mitchell interviews a thought leader or someone involved in thought leadership and shares best practices to tease out how to become an effective thought leader. Thought Leadership with Mitchell Levy is part of the FIR Podcast Network, a series of business podcasts founded by Neville Hobson and Shel Holtz. The anchor podcast in the network is the Hobson and Holtz Report, a weekly show presented since January 2005. For information about FIR, to see show notes for the podcasts, and to subscribe, visit www.forimmediatereleasebiz. You can also subscribe via iTunes and other podcast directories. We welcome your comments about Thought Leadership with Mitchell Levy. Join the conversation in the FIR community on Google+. Look for the FIR podcast community. Or email us at FIRcomments@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.